I am René Arnoux, and you must to listen like me, F1 Weekly.
There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
You want to
keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Fall, my co-host. Nasser Hamid will be bringing us Motorsports Mondial in the second part of the program. This is podcast number 404, January 21st, 2010. Stephen?
This F1 Weekly Podcast brought to you by Marin Karting, your source for all your karting needs. Check them out. You know you want to.
Thank you, Stephen. And of course, that's where I go for my karting needs. On today's program, $5 million gets you a drive with USF1. Button says, Lewis needs to share. Schumacher going for both titles and Nico's car number. And, of course, Motorsports Mondial with the guru himself, Mr. Nasser Hamid. Steve, welcome to the studio. I hope your holiday was excellent.
Colder than bejesus being in upstate New York for a week. I think it broke 40 once the whole week. Most of the time it was sub-30s.
Well, that's what you like, and that's what you went to, and there you have it, and there you go. Keep up the good work, Stephen. There you have it, USF1, and of course, Campos F1. Say, $5 million, you can drive.
Okay, yeah, we don't care if you can drive, but if you've got money, you can wreck our car for us.
Exactly, and it's sort of sad that, USF1, who's starting to show some signs of life, and apparently, you know, they had the nose test last week, Campos has had the crash test this week, everything is starting to come together, but, you know, they're going to be, well, at least Bruno Senna hopefully will be worthy, but I'm really sad that they're not going to have at least... You know, a marginal. I mean, I think Jacques Villeneuve at USF1 would be a good, decent start.
This would be a quality driver. Somebody that you know knows the tracks, knows how to drive a car. I'm afraid that, you know, you make it a paid driver, you're going to end up with somebody like Ujaide, and, you know, you're maybe not so necessarily competitive car is going to be really uncompetitive because your driver is... a wuss.
Not only that, but, you know, do you want to give your mechanics that much practice?
Yeah, exactly.
Preparing the car? Or would you prefer getting somebody with some, you know, who's seasoned a little bit?
Yeah.
I mean, I would even think somebody.
But like, there's always the possibility, too, that they're not going to find somebody with $5 million and they're going to go, you know, basically walk up to Jacques and go, you want to come drive?
What about Takuma Sato? He could probably, you know, rustle up a few million from a Japanese conglomerate. Somebody like that at least would add some excitement to USF1. And, I mean, Jose Maria Lopez or whatever his name is not going to bring the excitement that we need.
No, that, but nobody in the States knows who he is. You know, and interesting because the fact that it takes $5 million came from Roger Dornbos. He'd have been a good choice.
Robert Dornbos would have been a good choice.
You know,
absolutely.
He's run a couple of races. You know, he's been a test driver. He's run a couple of races. He's experienced. But I like what he said. Hey, if I had $5 million, I'd be racing at the front.
In IRL. Right, exactly. Why race at the back in Formula One when you can race at the front, at least mid-pack in Indy Racing League?
Exactly. Be competitive.
No, we'll see what happens. But I hope USF1 comes to grips and gets somebody interesting. I was hoping a Graham Rahal would step up to the plate.
Yeah, I have a hard time seeing anybody of name in the States jumping on this bandwagon until USF1 has proven that they can put at least a marginally competitive car on the track.
Yeah, which is sad, but there you have it. But I hope they do get it going. Of course, the engines, the Cosworth motors, have been shipped out. They're probably getting them right now.
Found it interesting that USF1 is the only one building their own gearbox.
I thought that was interesting too, but being... I mean, the technology in the United States is very capable of doing that, especially in Charlotte, where a lot of NASCAR teams have a lot of experience in that department. And, you know, they've got the five axis
mills. Actually, they probably have six axis mills. But it should be interesting to see, because also they were talking the bit on the blog from the engineers at USF1 talking about how we've tried to think out of the box and try to do things a little different, try to find that magic bullet like the double diffuser. So it will be interesting to see, you know, if it's pretty and quick or if it's just ugly and slow.
Well, we'll see. I prefer pretty and slow, if anything.
Exactly.
So, well, yeah, but I do wish them luck. But I'm glad to see that we were wrong. And I think they'll be on the grid in Bahrain. And for a while,
they're certainly looking a lot more lively,
yeah, exactly,
than they were at the end of the year.
Exactly. So we'll see what happens there. And, you know, testing does start 1st of February. And it's the 21st. We've only got a little over a week. It's going to be exciting. We're going to see some new cars out there. And I can't wait. Of course, Renault will be showing their car in Valencia, the R30, on January 31st. A number of teams are coming out on January 31st. Ferrari and McLaren's coming out, I think, February 2nd. So it's all coming to bear.
Should be very interesting. I'll be interested to see some of the first cars and see what they look like.
No, it's going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait. Of course, Renault came out and said that Robert Kubica could be all by himself testing the car. He could be the full development driver because for some reason Monsieur Boullier is not prepared to make a decision on a second driver. And I'm sort of
I'm like, him. Why? Get somebody in there now. What are you waiting for? It's like,
well, you know, it's like a fine wine, Steve. It's, you know.
Frankly, I don't see it serving any purpose other than, okay, you don't have to pay him another 2 weeks, but you're going to pay him an annual salary anyway. So it doesn't really matter. Well, I thought that there was a rumor spinning around last week about Nicky going becoming Robert's teammate again. So that would be interesting.
Well, Nick Heidfeld is a good choice. Nick Heidfeld is a good choice for USF1.
Yeah, exactly.
Nick Heidfeld is a seasoned, good driver who will help with a lot of development. And, you know, I thought for sure he would go to Sauber, and he's not. He's still not signed. Then there was the rumor a couple of days ago about Giancarlo Fisichella going to Sauber, which I thought was a little bizarre, but then they're Ferrari-powered, and, you know, they could make a little dealio.
Yeah, but I thought that really bizarre. Didn't he jump ship from Force India to be the test driver for Ferrari this season?
Well, he's realized that, you know, okay, what you wish for sometimes isn't that exciting. Okay, he got to wear the red, he got the free pasta, the panties, you know, and then all of a sudden, okay, well, this is nice, but you know, being a test driver is not that exciting.
It's freaking boring.
Well, he probably had a couple of lunches with Luca Badoer and said, you know what, Luca, I really don't want to do what you're doing. It's not that much fun.
Yeah, and then he's like, that guy again, that damn Spaniard's in my, taking stuff out of my trailer again.
Exactly. And of course, for me, the shock, but it was rumored already, was Pedro de la Rosa going to Sauber, and it's confirmed he will team up with our friend, Kobayashi.
Yeah, that should be an interesting, good team. You got your young gun and your seasoned veteran.
And there you go.
You really, especially in a team that's, but I wouldn't say that they're really, because they're pretty much just a rollover of the BMW team, so that's not so much new. But, you know, it's always a good formula for a team.
Well, I think it's an adequate formula. Pedro de la Rosa is not going to be that competitive.
No, because he hasn't raced since
2006 when he replaced Juan Pablo Montoya.
And he wasn't very quick.
I mean, he's a test driver, but for development purposes, Kobayashi's not going to, he's going to be Stinko.
Yeah.
He's just going to be that crazy and wild guy out there. You know,
he's going to be the fast little Japanese kid.
So the balance, I think, especially, you know, now they're going to be running Ferrari engines. So there's going to be some development involved, even though, you know, the BMW wasn't that great in 2009. So hopefully they've made a step up. And Pedro De La Rosa is going to help tremendously.
Oh, definitely.
But he's not going to be exciting on track. Kobayashi is going to do that. It's very interesting stuff. You got to love all this stuff.
Yo, I love all the extra news we're getting because we've got the four new teams.
Absolutely.
Well, actually, isn't it like five because the Sauber flipped? But we have lots of new teams.
Yes, but BMW Sauber is still called BMW Sauber. They need to fix that right away, especially when there's Ferrari motor in the back.
Yeah, I would think Ferrari would be pushing that through Fota or something.
Exactly. My favorite second story is Michael Schumacher wanting Nico Rosberg's number. Now, I thought that was fascinating. Number three. Apparently, he's got this thing about odd numbers.
So why doesn't he just pay Nico for it? You know,
buy it?
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's kind of some of the things they do on professional sports teams in America. If, you know, a guy gets traded over and somebody else has his number, you know, maybe it's not cash. Maybe it's in kind. You know, maybe he goes out and buys him a case of beer or gives him a gift card for a nice dinner for him and his wife. Just something, you know, just don't walk over and go, just go around and go to Ross. Ross, I want three.
Well, it's pretty simple. Michael Schumacher wants the number. Michael Schumacher gets the number. That was a pretty simple thing for Ross Brawn and the hierarchy over at Mercedes. What Michael wants, Michael gets.
Yeah, and then the old overstating the obvious. Michael's going to be trying to win both championships. No, he came back just to piddle around in the middle of the field.
And you know what? I think that is the coolest part about Michael Schumacher coming back. He's saying, and Ross Brawn has said, he will win. It's Joe Namath all over again.
I know. It's a little bit. Do you even know your car is going to be competitive? You know
what? That's great. The beginning of psychological warfare.
Exactly.
It is here, and it's wonderful. I dig it. Because some people, you know, even Fernando said, well, it could take time, you know, for Ferrari to be the front runner. And some, you know, even Jenson Button hopes that McLaren will hit the ground running. But Schumacher just goes, oh, no, we're winning the championship. Ross Brawn, oh, Schumacher will win the championship. I'm going for both championships. I love that kind of attitude. Exactly. And that's that kind of arrogance is what made Schumacher what he is today. And it's already begun. Of course, Nico is probably already called to Rubinho, and
Nico's probably already shaking his head, going, "What did I get into?"
Exactly. So I think it's very, very fascinating. But and apparently, the GP2 test for Schumacher was just perfect. No mistakes. There was no accidents. There was some rain, of course, but he was very exhilarated by how wonderfully he did, and And even, you know, everybody is saying this is going to be one hell of a season.
Should be really interesting. The return of Michael Schumacher, four teams worth of moving roadblocks. Should be fun. What does Button expect Lewis Hamilton to share?
Well, you know, remember.
His cafe or?
No. Remember at the beginning.
His girlfriend?
Remember 2007 when Fernando was there, they said that Fernando set up. Sometimes he would have a killer set up, and you know then
you tell his engineers not to share it.
Well, exactly. They're not supposed to share setup information between teams because the teams within McLaren should be competitive. I mean, they're individual engineers, and that's natural. You want to beat, you know, obviously that's the team to beat, which is right next to you in the same building. So apparently Button is already using the share. You know, we're a happy family.
We're a big team.
And I'm telling you, the Kumbaya album has already been busted out. So I think Jenson Button is
little
already...
campfire in the middle of the garage.
That's the wrong attitude. He should be saying, I'm going to kick some Boutte. I'm going to kick some Hamilton Boutte. But to ask Lewis to share, it's not going to happen. I already see slings and arrows. Also really interesting, and I don't understand why he's getting another test, because he's already said he is fine. The eye is perfect. I am El Machismo de Brasilia. But apparently, Felipe Massa is getting another test in a 2008 Ferrari at Catalunya while they're testing MotoGP champion Valentino Rossi. Felipe Massa raised his hand and said, "Ooh, I want to go." And
yeah, I want to drive a car too.
It's done. He's going to go down there, and the FIA has cleared it. Of course, they're going to be using GP2 tires to comply with the Formula One testing ban. And he'll get just a couple extra hours before testing officially starts on February 1st. So
interesting.
I find that interesting. And I don't know if it's going to give you an edge. The F2008 car is somewhat so different.
Yeah, it's completely dated because it's got all of the extra aero goodies.
It does. But I sort of like
it. Gets him back behind the wheel of a Formula One car to do some testing.
I agree.
And I'm sure that they're going to have some physicians around to, you know, double check him. Maybe send him out for a CAT scan afterwards.
No, and I'm sure they'll record it and send the DVD to Fernando and, you know, just to make sure that Fernando knows that Massa's going to be on the up and up. The eye thing is over. It's behind him. And he's 100%.
Yeah, if he wouldn't be in a car if he wasn't going to be 100%.
And my favorite part, Felipe Massa, of course, has been spending time with Fernando. And he said that he's spoken with Fernando more to this day than he's ever spoken to Kimi Raikkonen in the 2 years that they were at Ferrari.
Frankly, doesn't surprise me.
Of course not. Kimi Raikkonen isn't a little social butterfly.
But not only that, but I'm sure that there was a bit of a language barrier with Kimi.
You think?
Since Kimi doesn't like to use language.
You think, well, I'm sure Kimi must have picked up a little Italian.
Yeah, but Kimi doesn't like to speak, therefore no language.
Well, you know what? I've seen him interviewed in the WRC world, and he speaks quite a bit.
It's because he's excited about driving a WRC car.
Wow. I think, he speaks a lot when he's in that gorilla suit, too, when he's nipping the bourbon. So anyway, there you have it. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back with another one of those great motorsports mondial. The limo is just pulled up. So let's take a quick break and we'll come back with Nasser Hamid after this brief message.
Are you between the ages of 8 and 80 and want to experience the thrill of wheel-to-wheel racing for yourself? Do you want a hobby that you, your family, or group of friends can share? The Jim Russell Northern California Rotex Challenge Series, sponsored in part by Marin Karting, is the fast-growing Northern California series of the Rotex Max Challenge USA and can lead to an FIA-approved world championship. Rotex answers your dream of racing. With a reliable engine that's sealed, keeps carts on the same level playing field, your operating costs low, your fun level high, and your skill determining your success. Be your own number one driver as part of the Jim Russell Northern California Rotex Challenge Series. Race on to NorCalRotex.com to learn more and see MarinKarting.com for Rotex engines, parts, and accessories.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the guru himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. Greetings and racing regards. And today, Mr. Rogers, we are going upscale. You know, we used to serve in-flight burritos. Today, we have a full enchilada.
Whew.
Yes. We shall start, because of the lack of motorsports going on, we shall start with Sound of Motorsports. And here is the end of the MotoGP race from Barcelona last year, which saw a great battle between local boy Jorge Lorenzo, who got a last corner visit by the in-house doctor. Take it away, Mr. Executive Producer.
È durissima Lorenzo davanti, Rossi dietro, non c'è spazio qui,
troppo vicino.
Bravi, ce la fa, è entrato, non ci credo, non ci posso credere.
No, cosa ce l'ha fatta, non ci posso credere nemmeno io, è impossibile.
Bravo, Rossi c'è, che gara, che sorpasso.
Come ha fatto a rimanere?
Che cavolo gli
Stoner,
volete
terzo.
Dire? Bravo.
Provizioso quarto, in volata.
Bravo.
Come ha fatto a entrare così forte?
Okay, welcome back. And talking of Barcelona, moi might be in Montmeló, Barcelona, for the Spanish Grand Prix. I'm thinking and planning. Hopefully soon I will put in a request for vacation time, see how much time I have, and then Barcelona, here I come. Okay, so we shall, the headlines here would be Dakar Rally is over and another Muy Macho Hombre de España is the big winner. Jensen speaks at the Autosport show, and you know when Jensen speaks, everybody listens.
Especially Lewis.
Yeah, apart from Nick Fry and Ross Brawn. And Audi will skip the Sebring show, and I was going to have the famous last words from Felipe Massa, but you've already jump-started me on that, so thanks
a lot.
Well,
I have to have some fun, too.
Yeah, that's sure, no problem. Okay, so we shall start with Dakar Rally, now move to South America from Sahara Desert. Second running through Argentina and Chile brought another win for VDEB, Volkswagen. Did you watch any of this?
I've watched some of it online.
Pretty interesting.
Very exciting.
Yes. How about you, Mr. Openwine?
I got to see a little bit of it last week while I was in New York. Some interesting stuff. Poor guys on the motorcycles trying to warm their hands on their exhaust pipes was kind of interesting.
Being in New York, did you meet CFD?
No, I did not.
It was business trip?
Business trip.
Okay. Leading a VW sweep of the podium was former World Rally Champion Carlos Sainz. His winning margin was 2 minute 12 seconds. Senior Sainz was very proud of his win and said, and I quote, "It has been a very important day for me. Spain has finally won the Dakar with cars and I'm delighted." End of quote. In second place, you have any interest in Carlos Sainz?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
He's been a great guy and he was in WRC not that long ago.
Yeah. He was the main guy for Toyota for many years, if I remember correctly. In second place was my distant cousin, Nasser Al-Attiyah from Qatar. And third was American Mark Miller. And I believe Mark Miller was second last year. He was definitely on the podium last year. Stefan Peter Hansel, who has won in every category of the Dakar Rally, was fourth in his BMW. Last year's winner from South Africa, Janiel De Villiers, was seventh in his VDEB. With Orange County's finest Robbie Gordon 8th in his Hummer. I would really like to see Robbie Gordon in a factory drive, not just a, you know, effort on his own. I mean, can you imagine Robbie Gordon winning the Dakar Rally? Now, a NASCAR driver winning a Dakar Rally. That'll make a huge, huge statement. The bike division was won by Cyril Dupre. Truck division was won by the Russian Vladimir Shagin of the Kamaz team. And Kamaz is a very major heavy truck manufacturer based in Tatarstan province of Russia, for those who care for such things. Talking of Russia, country's leading racing driver, Tovarish Vitaly Petrov, he could be the next Muy Macho Hombre de Sovieteka. He is one of several drivers hoping to land the second seat at Renault. Reports are Renault would prefer a paid driver overpaying Romain Grosjean, who did not impress much in the team after Nelsini was booted out. I was kind of disappointed. I knew he was not going to rattle Alonso's cage, but I was expecting him something much better than Nelsini.
Well, that's what happens when you step up to the top plate.
Yeah. All these young drivers who are just dying to get to F1, not good for their career.
I agree. But the Petrov, runner-up champion in GP2, has some decent credentials.
Yeah. Petrov has been a race winner in GP2 and last year would have won the championship, but had his brosh eaten by a rookie. Rookies can create a lot of problems, huh? Mm-hmm.
But Nico
Hülkenberg.
Yes. Well, there you go. I think Petrov should do a year of test driving first, but then there's so little test driving. That's the problem. That's not... It's terrible.
You know, I ran into him a couple of years ago at Barcelona for the Spanish Grand Prix, and I asked him if I can do an interview, and he says, well, he was going someplace. He said, you can walk with me and talk. So we were just chatting. And actually, I did the interview, but unfortunately, one of those few times where due to technical glitch, we lost the conversation. But I was walking with him. I asked him, how much support do you have for your career in your country? And he stopped, looked at me, and I thought he was going to give me like two thumbs up. He gives me two thumbs down. So I don't know what's going on there. But apparently they're saying that he has some serious backing, up to $10 million. Okay, next is Power to the People. First batch of Cosworth engines are on their way to 5 teams. Campos, Lotus, USF1, Virgin, and Williams. The first F1 test of the season begins February 1 in Valencia. and I'm very, very excited.
Which is very, very soon.
Yeah, and really looking forward to it. USF1 will begin their testing program at Barber Motorsports Park in Birmingham, Sweet Home, Alabama. Testing day, like their driver lineup, is not yet announced. But wait, there's more. According to Racer.com and Crash.net, among others, the seats at USF1 will be filled by Jose Maria Lopez of Don't Cry For Me Argentina and James Rossiter, a British bloke who was a test driver at Honda F1. And Robert Dornbosch has revealed that he was offered a seat at USF1 for only $5 million. His answer was, and this was a smart answer, if I had $5 million, I would run up front in Indy cars and not back of the bus operation around the world. Would you agree with this kind of an assessment?
Yes. Me and Steve mentioned it. We talked about that. And I think Robert Dornbosch is actually right. I mean,
and he's been in Formula One. Sometime, you know, it's worth to take a back of the bus operation so you can beat the hell out of your teammate, go half a second faster than, you know, what Alonso did with Minardi and other people also. And that's how you can express yourself. And I think Nico Hülkenberg will do this sooner the better. But I think towards the tail end of the season, he should have a, Rubinho will have another German problem on his hand. He thought German measles was gone.
It's funny back. Because poor Rubinho, another German managed by Weber.
Yeah, the nightmare continues.
Did okay. Nico ask for Rubens number two?
Oh, wouldn't that be something?
Probably.
Okay, back to Cosworth. Cosworth, short for company founders Mike Costin and Keith Duckworth, first won a Grand Prix on their debut in the 1967 Dutch Grand Prix at Zandvoort with Jim Clark at the wheel. And if you start to read history of motor racing, this is one of the first things that will be thrown at you again and again. It's such a famous event.
This is always at the top of the quiz.
Yeah, because also it was the debut of the new Lotus 49, if you remember. Today, the company is owned by ex-Champ Car owner Kevin Kalkhoven, the nicest billionaire you can meet. The gentleman is originally from Australia and made his buco box during the tech boom at JDS Uniface. The Rosberg Roast has already started. You probably talked about this. Has already started at Mercedes-Benz Racing before the cars hit the track. Shuey has taken Nico's number three. At least Nico is faring better than Heinz-Harald Frentzen, ironically teammate to Michael in the Mercedes sports car program. Frentzen lost his girlfriend to Michael. So sad. But I don't think Michael.
So sorry.
Yeah, oh yeah. Wonder who's singing that. Anyway, charge of the Red Bull, the energy drink company has clipped the wings of young, talented Italian driver Mirko Bortolotti. They wanted him to race in F2 again this year, but live in Milton Keynes, England, which is where the Red Bull team is based. Very close to Mr. Brazier's palatial residence. And like their other drivers, Daniel Ricciardo and some other drivers they have who are based in Milton Keynes area, Bortolotti refused and was booted out from the Red Bull Brigade, which tells me that either he has some other backing or family can write him a check to go Formula 2 or something else.
Exactly. Or he might be helped with the Ferrari's new young driver development program.
Yeah, nice guy. And we did an interview with him recently, as you know. Okay, this is what I did like about him. You know, he is not, because his name was being thrown by Toro Rosso that he might take that seat, which is never a good idea. He is not in a rush to reach F1 as he is only 20 years old. He was quoted as saying, F1 is not a game and he wants to get there when he is ready. And the interview we did was only a few weeks ago, so if anybody's interested, they can listen to it. And he's Italian, but has spent most of his life in Austria. So he's learned in English and German and what else? Italian, of course, naturally. Okay, next we come to Alex Bruntel. Bambino of Martin Brundle is still looking at his 2010 options. Last year he competed in F2 Championship. And he's a funny kid. When I interviewed him last year, and I asked him to give a message to all our listeners, and I mentioned we have quite a few ladies also listening. He goes, call me. So hopefully we'll catch up with him soon. And the wind cried Eiley. Former head of aerodynamics at Ferrari, John Eiley, who has been on gardening leave from Scuderia Ferrari, is back at McLaren for the 2010 season. And let's just hope he didn't bring any stationery or pencils from there. And we don't need another problem, you know. We want motor racing to be the front news of Formula One, not from scandals. Okay, the 2010 GP2 grid is now set as all the seats have been filled. No drivers from North America, as far as I know, which is unfortunate. One of the preseason favorites is Jules Bianchi of France, who last year won the F3 Euro Series with 10 victories. Very impressive performance in his, and this was his second year. In his first year, he won a couple of them. You know, thing he did, interestingly, is he won the F3 Masters as his first F3 win. And I think Nico Hülkenberg did that thing. And this Finnish kid, on whom I'm very bullish, he did the same thing this year, Valtteri Bottas. Other names to watch in the GP2 season this year among the rookies are Marcus Ericsson of Sweden. Last year he won a championship in Japan, which I believe was the Japanese F3, and he is managed by Kenny Bragg, a guitarist and racing driver who won the Indy 500 when Robbie Gordon ran out of petrol on the last lap. And Swiss driver Fabio Leimer is also expected to do well after dominating the Formula Master Series last year, and we'll see what happens. There is an English kid, a British kid, what's his name, Alexander Sims. He is in F3, he was a rookie in F3 Euro Series. I think, you know, he's going to do well down the road too. Just a pre-warning on some of the names coming. And then we have your favorite, Sam Bird also.
Of course.
Yeah. Okay, the 2010 British F3 Championship will have a total of 30 races. Three races per weekend. They will also travel to Manicur and Hockenheim. Preseason favorite with Raikkonen Robertson Racing is another of my distant cousins, Felipe Nasser from Brazil. And last year, he won a lot of races in Formula BMW Europe Championship and very impressively won the championship, which was his first full year of motor racing. Very, very impressive. Boy George is asking, do you really want to hurt me? Okay, Tony George has resigned from the board of directors of Hulman & Company. That would be Anton Tony Hulman, his grandfather, thus ending his association with the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. 6 months ago, he was pushed out as CEO of IMS by his mother and sisters. His lasting legacy will be the beautiful-looking IRL cars from Dallara, also known as, in the immortal words of Paul Tracy, crap wagons. And, you know, he calls it as he sees it. You have any comment on TG leaving IMS?
Yeah, it's fascinating. I was always hoping Formula One would come back with Tony George completely gone. I don't know.
Yeah, it would be nice to have a race here in the U.S.
Yeah, but I doubt that we'll go back to Indy. If Tony's not there to kind of browbeat
Mr. Eccleston.
Bernie is not. If it comes back to the States, it's going to be somewhere else, probably.
Yeah, probably Vegas street race and nighttime freak show, you know. So anyway, we move on to Room Press Ski Meeting at Madonna di Campiglio in Italy. The 20th meet, the press with Ferrari and Ducati teams came to an end last weekend. And this was very interesting, sir, Mr. Roger. Please.
I know what happened.
Please pay attention. There were two races organized on the frozen lake. The Fiat Panda 4x4 race was won by Felipe Massa with Casey Stoner and Nicky Hayden second and third respectively. Fernando Alonso was fourth. So far, so good. Second event featured a go-kart competition. Big winner after leading from start to finish was Kentucky kid, Mr. Nicky Hayden. Massa and Stoner shared the podium with him. Nando was DNF after crashing into barriers. And these things happen. But rumors, you know how quickly the vultures come in the sky. Rumors are already circulating that he has sent a text message to Luca di Monza Zimolo asking him to slow down Massa. Thank you, Mr. Rich. Mr. Rogers, what do you have to say about your buddy?
I think Fernando's going to be fine. Felipe Massa is not who he's going to have to be worried about. When you have Schumacher out there and Lewis Hamilton, Nico Hülkenberg.
Sebastian Vettel.
Yeah.
My three pick for the championship this year, without knowing the packages, alphabetically, Alonso, Hamilton, Vettel.
Vettel.
Yeah. And then when it depends on the package, you know.
What about Jenson Button?
you know, if he can, yeah, he's coming up. Next is Jenson Button right here. Okay. Our Jens, speaking at the Autosport show in Birmingham, UK, sweet home UK, not Alabama this time, the reigning world champion revealed that he will drive his new McLaren for the first time on February 3rd at Valencia. And the first question would be, why is Lewis so quick? No, I'm just kidding. He said, and I quote, "So I want to get ready for the first test like it is the first race, because I don't want an excuse when I get to the first race alongside Lewis. I want to be ready for the first race 100%. End of quote. Jensen also said he would like to have a strong start to the season, and he should know the value of that. If Barrichello had found the brake pedal on the Brawn car early in the season, or if Sebastian Vettel had not outbraked himself in Melbourne and Monte Carlo, the championship could have taken a different turn. But these things did not happen, and Jenson Button won the championship fair and square, and very deservedly so. So no problem there. Button has been dressed down by every driver and pundit in going to McLaren. If he can prove the world wrong and overhaul Hamilton, that will be one of the biggest, biggest F1 upsets. What do you think?
I agree. And there's a good chance that he may be able to do it.
I tell you, in pure speed, I don't think he's going to beat this kid. But I think he can beat him in the championship because he is a smooth driver. He rarely makes a mistake, which is not something you can say about Hamilton. Even,
exactly.
You know, even with the best car, I mean, the guy ran into the back of Raikkonen, back of Alonso in Bahrain. So he can outfox this guy. And, you know, at the end of the records book, we'll see who the champion was or, you know, how many races he went. But I think on pure speed, I have to wish him good luck.
Yeah. We'll see how the packages look.
Exactly.
After a few weeks of testing, I think we'll have a better idea of what's really going down.
Exactly. Also, Brundle, also on the Autosport stage, was ex-Grand Prix driver and now commentator for the BBC. He called for test and reserve drivers given more time during the season, which I also very much would like to see. He said, and I quote, "They're being put under the spotlight too early. They're not ready for it. Alguer Shuari has got nowhere near enough experience to cope with driving a Formula One car." End of quote. He also mentioned the struggles of Luca Bedoer and Romain Grosjean. Okay, so Stirling Moss. He opened the show to the fans on Saturday and had this to say about Schumacher's return. And I quote, "One problem with Michael, from my point of view, is that he has never really had a really fast number two. Usually the best way you can tell how fast a driver is to look at the number two and see where he is in relation to him." End of quote. Well, that's his opinion. What say you?
Well, I think Barrichello was fast and has out-qualified Schumacher a number of times. And even when Schumacher was teammates to other good drivers like Jos Verstappen, Eddie Irvine.
Herbert. Brundle.
Exactly. I hate to say it, but in the end, they were all number twos. And they didn't want to start that way.
No, you know, you are number two because somebody is making you number two. And that's, I think, what happened here. And credit goes to Willy Weber, you know, making sure that. And that's why you need a manager, you know. Last thing you need is a cage rattling from your teammate. Just ask Alain Prost, you know, or somebody else. But I think we should move on. Okay, recommended reading. On autosport.com, there is an interesting Q&A, which I posted on the forum also, with man known in America as Super Sub, Roberto Moreno. You know, the sad part is I ran into him at Hockenheim last October. I asked him if I can do a quick interview. He was busy. He says, "No, I'm very busy right now, maybe later." Later was never came. And then when he was leaving the track, he saw me. He came up to me. He says, "We can do the interview if you..." He pulled a Petrov on me. "Can you walk with me?" And I was so tired. I said, "Man, can you just give me 5 minutes standing?" So he did. We had a nice conversation, and technical glitch screwed up the interview. I don't know what was going on with our iPod. But, you know,
you need two recording devices going at the same time.
Yeah. So, yeah, but, you know, sometimes even that will not be possible when you're chasing down people.
I understand.
But anyway, Roberto Moreno, there's a Q&A. The heading is "How to Get to Formula One Without Money." As a 12-year-old, this is why I love this business of motor racing. As a 12-year-old, he bought a motorcycle in Brasilia where the motorcycle mechanic was Nelson Piquet Sr. And Nelson Piquet was the one who taught him. He was doing karting, and he Piquet wins the F3 championship and Burton comes to Brazil and says, you have to go to England. He says, I have no money. I've never raced car. He said, just go. I'll work something out for you. So Piquet did help him.
No, it's a very, very good article. I read it myself.
Yeah, and even he was talking about one thing he said to me that really touched me, you know, that hit me. I asked him if his kids were, I didn't know much about his family, you know, so I said, do your kids have any interest in motor racing? And he says to me, I have two daughters and I've kept them as far away from motor racing as possible, which basically tells me, because he, knowing the struggles he had to go through, he wouldn't want them to go through. But we're going to catch up with him and bring more juice to the table.
Okay.
Well, I was going to do this famous last words. You've already done that, so I'm going to skip on it. So shall we take a break? And after that, we have a little tribute to Gilles Villeneuve, who was born on January 18th, which also happens to be my birthday. And thanks a lot for that great gift I got from UPS. It was like a Pandora box. I opened box after box, and there was a Cupid doll of Fernando Alonso. So we'll be back after the short break.
We'll take a quick break, and we'll come back with a moment in motorsports history.
Hi, I'm Clark Rogers, host of F1Weekly.com's podcast. Please visit our website, F1Weekly.com, your fresh new destination for all your Formula One needs. F1Weekly.com brings you a weekly podcast that covers the latest news, rumors, and insightful commentary related to the pinnacle of modern motorsports, Formula One. You can find us on iTunes and other popular podcast locations. F1Weekly.com. Thank you.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com, and now our moment in motorsports history with Gilles Villeneuve.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Clark, as you know, Gilles Villeneuve was born in January, and of course one of the most popular and likable drivers to grace the grid in Grand Prix racing. So I thought I'd do a little tribute to him, because I was a huge Gilles Villeneuve fan. He was born on January 18, 1950, when the family was living in Chambly in the French-speaking province of Quebec. He started competing in snowmobile racing, which he financed from his job at a construction company, and a lot of his family members, especially his brother Jacques, they also, did for years and years and won a lot of championships. To get into car racing, Gilles Villeneuve enrolled in the Jim Russell School at Mont-Tremblant. And what happened, he had gone there with some friends, and he basically was, what are these yahoos doing here? I can do a better job. And so he enrolled there, won the local Formula Ford Championship in his first year, and then moved to Formula Atlantic. It is very well recorded he sold his house to go racing in Formula Atlantic, living and going track to track with his wife, Joanne, and children. But it was all worth it, as this is the series where he really made his name, impressing the likes of Keke Rosberg and other European drivers from the European scene. Because in those days, IROC used to be big, a lot of Formula One drivers would come, and this was the case with Formula Atlantic. A lot of Formula Two, Formula One drivers would come and take part in these races. In the summer of 1976, at the invitation of then little-known Ron Dennis, he raced a Formula Two car in the streets of Pau in France. The car overheated, but the driver was making his mark. Then came the famous street fight at Three Rivers in Canada, where he beat the man who was on his way to becoming the 1976 Formula One world champion, our hero James Hunt. Hunt was so impressed, he told his manager, Teddy Mayer, to look at Villeneuve for a seat in his team. And it's very rare that a good racing driver would recommend another good racing driver. And we all know why.
They don't do that anymore.
No, not at all. Gilles Villeneuve made his Grand Prix, this I remember so very well, Clark, his Grand Prix debut in the 1977 British Grand Prix, and qualified ninth, which was faster than the team's regular second driver, Jochen Mass. And that really made a huge, huge news in the world of racing, that some unknown from Canada out qualifies the team. And Mass had got a bit of experience by then. In the race, Villeneuve recorded the fifth fastest lap before retiring, and he had the usual quite a few spins also, which was, always trying very hard. From then on, Villeneuve would only race in a red-hot Ferrari. His maiden Grand Prix win came in his hometown race in 1978, of course, Montreal. But it was raced the following season, which he did not even win. That will live in the hearts and minds of passionate fans of Formula One. his epic last lap duel with René Arnoux for second place in the French Grand Prix at Dijon-Prenois.
As they go round Villeroy, he's got the shorter line, he's got second position, he's through, they bang wheels, he's off, and he's back again. René Arnoux off the circuit and back again, and now Villeneuve's in second position, and this is the last lap, and Villeneuve goes over the corrugations, and he nearly loses the front as they go up to Parabolique on the 80th and last lap. And he's back, he's in second position. Villeneuve is second in the Ferrari, down to third position goes Arnoux.
His most famous win was the freight train drive at Jarama in the 1981 Spanish Grand Prix, where he held off several drivers, all within a second, lap after lap. And I remember listening to this race back home live on Radio France International. This also turned out to be his final Grand Prix win. In his Ferrari days, Gilles and the family were based in Monte Carlo, and he piloted them to races in his helicopter. And you know, many years ago, I was reading an interview with Keke Rosberg, and he said that, of course, he was in that race. He said on Monday, Zolder, you know, it's in Belgium, of course. He said on Monday after the race, he had to go and do some like photo for the sponsor. And he said there was nothing there but a lot of trash, and Gilles Villeneuve's helicopter was still parked there. So pretty sad story there. My personal remembrance of Gilles Villeneuve would be of a driver who was hell-bent on finishing two or three places higher than what the car was capable of. A driver in the mold of Ronnie Peterson and Nigel Mansell, relentless and gutsy, always very exciting to watch. And of course, there are a lot of YouTubes of Gilles Villeneuve and different races, which I would highly recommend if somebody wants to know about his racing style. One of the very few Formula One drivers through the ages who were genuinely well-liked by all who race against them, watched them race, or employed them to race. His good friend Patrick Tambay, who also made his Formula One debut in the same race as Villeneuve, drove his number 27 Ferrari to victory at Imola in 1983. And those who know the history of Formula One understand the importance of this. He has a museum called Musée Gilles Villeneuve, and the website is www.museegillesvilleneuve.com. Please check it out if you're interested in more information about him and the museum. And according to their website, it's open daily from 9 to 5. If anybody is interested in buying a book on Gilles Villeneuve, his story by Gerald Donaldson, who is a Canadian journalist, is very, very well researched, and I will highly recommend it. Thank you for listening.
Nasser, another outstanding Motorsports Mondial and a moment in motorsports history. Let's just go right to the wrap-up. No forum updates. Everybody's on vacation. No emails. We just don't have any more time. We have a few calendars left.
See.
And those will ship really fast now because the post office lines have declined.
That is correct.
So there you have it. Marin Carney is proud to organize and support the 2010 Jim Russell Northern California Rotax Series. Marin Carney offers CRG carts, engines, and parts for all carts, engine service, driver coaching, and trackside support to Northern California carters. For more information, contact Marin Carney at marincarting.com. And also a congratulatory remark to Troy Castaneda, who did an outstanding job representing his sponsors. And of course, Marin Carting is one of the more important ones, as all of them are important.
And representing USA in Egypt.
Absolutely. I believe he came in fifth.
Right.
So, yeah, that was a great story. Keep up the good work, Nasser. I want to mention MySpace, Facebook, and Twitter. If you tweet, keep it friendly, or you could get arrested. If you'd like to advertise a cross-promote with our website
and podcast... Why is the finger pointing towards me?
That's just natural. We do that in America.
Guilty by appearance.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. It's called racial profiling.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. If you'd like to advertise a cross-promote with our website or podcast, email us at info@f1weekly.com. I want to thank everybody who listens. Thank goodness we have testing coming up in less than 2 weeks.
And Monte Carlo Rally is in action now.
Yes! Good night!
Bye-bye.
Good night.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com, thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport. a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.